Hello, everybody. Welcome to our last class in this module. Is there anyone here for the first time tonight? Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, Glenn, have you been here? No, this is it. Practice day. Yeah. So, yes, our practice day will be Saturday, January 24th, from 9 a.m. till 12 noon. So those of you who are keeping track on your completion cards, bring your cards that day so that Steve can sign off on them. And also, I'm still waiting for those of you who did Mind and Its Potential. You've handed in cards for that one. I'm still waiting to get those back from Robbie. As soon as I get them, I'll get them back to you. Our next module is going to be Presenting the Path, which is an overview of the Tibetan Buddhist path to enlightenment. You often hear it called the Lam Rim, or graduated path to enlightenment. Don Brown will be leading that. And we will start on Monday, February 2nd. It runs through March 9th. Again, at 7 to 8:30 on Monday nights. And our practice day will be on March 21st. And the Lam Rim is what Geshe-la is teaching on Wednesday nights, but in very great detail. So this next module would be very helpful if you're interested in attending Geshe-la's class, to give you a basis of the, at least of the big picture that he's working within.
Oh, it's a mute. yeah, we see the hardcore folks who are here tonight. I appreciate that. Let me see another announcement. If you've been tuned into any of the Kanapa Center emails or website, you see the annual appeal, and I've been making my little spiels and reporting that I've been doing my job of making them, but I did ask if there's any way the people who are collecting the money know that the money came from Discovering Buddhism. Do we get, like, credit, you know, for donating during this session? And she said, definitely put on the outside of your envelope, if it's cash or a check or anything you're putting in there, you know, DB. Then they know it came from DB class. So I don't actually get that trip to Hawaii, but it still helps them to know. And, I think the annual appeal has been fairly successful. I think it ends, what did you say, the end of the month? End of the month. So there's just a little bit more to go. But for those of us, you know, talk to Joanna about how we've seen this place grow from nothing to, you know, not having a teacher to having one, and just the incredible difference it's made. And then, you know, so it's like that meditation we've done when we take a building or we take part of our life and we go back, 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 back. But then you can go forward, 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 forward. And what do you think this place or this group will be like, you know, in 10, 20 years, 100 years? And we're all part of that now. So even with donations, but also with time and energy and good energy, we're contributing in all kinds of ways. So that's my advertisement. If you have any questions about any of that, just talk to me or Joanna afterwards. We'd be happy to answer questions. Or anybody else who, anybody, talk to each other and then talk to us. Okay, so we're going to start off with a little meditation, and remember to check your posture. There's 7 points to the posture. So a little mini review. So if you're in a chair, make sure your knees are forward, feet flat on the floor. If you're sitting on a cushion, you know, the absolute correct position you'll see in the tankas, you know, Buddha's feet are up on his thighs. That's called the lotus, full lotus. It's not very super comfortable, but that is the technical position. So the most important thing is that your back is straight. You know, kind of lined up, your vertebrae lined up like coins, finding that right position so you're not having too much tension, keeping your back straight. And then you're going to place your left hand just a little bit below your navel, your right hand on top, your thumbs just barely touching, so you're making this oval shape. You're placing that right below your navel. You can rest your hands against you, but make sure your elbows are out away from your body so that you can take nice deep breaths. You bring your chin down just a little bit so that your neck is also lined up with your spine and not breaking that nice straight flow of energy. Bring your tongue to the back of your teeth. Your jaw relaxes. Your eyes just a little bit open or gently closed, whichever is easiest for you. And then you put all your awareness on your breath. And as we begin to move into this meditation of bringing our mind back over and over to the breath like it's an elephant we're trying to catch and tie to a stake. Trying to tame it and bring it back to one place. But as we move into that, think about why you're here and why you're doing this. Why are you trying to tame your mind? Why, for you personally, have you been coming here and working on this? What have been your goals? Think about your short-term goals, you know, how you hope this helps you when you leave here tonight and as you move through your day tomorrow. And then think about your long-term goals in your life, in your future lives, and whichever way you want to look at this, what's your biggest goal in taming your mind? And then just be clearly set that as your intention for this meditation and this practice tonight. And now bring all your awareness to your breathing. Inhale, exhale, being one. And then when thoughts come up and try to pull you away from your count, very gently and compassionately bring your mind back to the count, recognizing how amazing it is that you realized that you were straying. And each time you bring it back, you have become stronger in your mindfulness, in your intention, and reaching your goal. And I'll ring the bell when we're ready to stop this. keeping your eyes closed, I'm going to read the Four Immeasurables. And as I read each line, try to bring your awareness to the sentiment expressed, just meditating on it. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Okay, and open your eyes, stretch, get your pencils out. What I have put together is just 8 questions. So I want you to just take some time and write your answer. Don't stress too much because it's mostly like 99.9% of it is for you. But then that knowledge that you have will be for everybody else. So it's really just so that you will be able to check where you're at. And then you'll always be able to refer back to this piece of paper when you're trying to answer questions or recall certain things about meditation. Any questions about it? Or we can call it something besides a test. We were calling it a rest before. It has to rhyme with test. It's the best. But anyway, just ask me if you have any questions, and shouldn't take that long. Thanks. I hear you take. I don't think you need open book. See if you can do it without open book. If you get stuck, then you know, just take one and pass it around.
Open mind.
It's open mind, right? And then later you're going to be. Later you'll be collaborating with other people on it. So if you get stuck right now on it, just don't worry about it. Just write as much as you know, and then I'm going to have you kind of collaborate with other folks. I hope I have enough. Okay. Don't let these guys get off scot-free up here. I'll get you one. Let me see. I think there might be some pencils out here. If anybody has an extra pen or pencil, some folks in the front need one. Oh, you came for test night. How are you? Oh, yeah, me either. I'm looking for an extra pencil. Oh. Well, I have these little pencils. That should be enough. Did you need a pencil? This, oh my God. Okay, it's in pink. You got something? Okay. Okay, take a minute or so to try to finish up, and if you're not finished in a minute, that's okay. You know, each one of these questions is volumes, so or not all of them, but there's some questions that you could write a whole lot more about. But I'm going to, there's a couple of people watching from home, so what I want to do, I'm going to read the questions out so they can hear them. But I want to get you in small groups so that I'm going to read a question then ask you in the group to describe your answers to each other and see what you think. Grade each other, help each other. So like if somebody got part of it and then you think you know another part, discuss it. And then we're going to see what you all think of each answer, okay? So that this way, it's not going to take you forever to get them back from me. It's not going to be scary because there's no red pencils or anything like that. And I want you to have the answers when you leave, okay? So get into groups of like no more than, say, four, so we... five at the most, so that you can actually have time to talk to each other and we can get through this. And if you're not finished, then you can finish that with the group, okay? Because, like I said, some of this will be, you'll be collaborating with people to get some help on ones that you might have been stuck with, to hear more information from your team. It's a group. The whole point is to be able to have this to take home, and so we want to make sure that you have the right information. Okay, so I'm going to read the question out so the people at home know what the test was, and then I'm going to give you a few minutes to talk to each other, and then I'm going to ask for you all to say out loud what the answer was to the first one, and we'll go through them like that, okay? All right, so the first one, the purpose of meditation. The purpose of meditation is to become familiar with positive states of mind and to decrease negative states of mind. Please discuss this. So you see there's no true or false, or is you discussing this, and how is this so? How could this be? Okay, so let's get some mics so that we can pass some mics around and hear, people at home can hear what your answers are. I think Brian might have one back there. Oh, there's two. Okay. Okay, so what were some answers? I've been hearing a little bit here and there. Anybody want to share an answer that their group kind of agreed on? Or were there wide ranges of answers in your groups? Or did everybody pretty much, you had some wide ranges? Okay. I think there's a third mic somewhere.
Thank you. We were all pretty much together. We were all around the idea of training your mind by practicing, so that number one, you recognize the negative states when they start to come up, mm-hmm. and then you more quickly return to the positive state when you're not practicing. But by you're essentially training your mind to be in that place, okay. you can get there more quickly and more often.
What do people think? Sound like a winning answer? Okay, anything else that people came up with that you want to share? Anything? Yeah.
Well, we talked about positive mind states bring happiness, and negative uh-huh. mind states bring suffering. So why would we want to bring more suffering on ourselves and others? So
okay,
it's
perfect.
Time to change.
Perfect. What?
Might as well.
Might as well. And if you have enlightenment in mind, then it's going to require positive mind states. Anything else? And, you know, we talked before about we have these habits with us. You know, the states of mind that we kind of reside in all the time that often get us in trouble. These habits we've carried with us through beginningless time. And what we're trying to do is create new habits. Now, the one thing you might want to add in there is that in we talked a little bit about how, you know, in a meditative state, it's easier for us to familiarize ourselves with those positive things. You know, we talk, you know, focusing on our breathing, becoming very mindful of this positive mind state rather than as we're in a rush driving down the road going, oh, yeah, I need to be calmer. There's less success with that than in a more meditative state, right? So try to combine that calm meditative state and this mindfulness of this positive state that we're trying to get to. It's like, you know, it's like stretching out before you play a game of basketball. It's like all the drills. Okay. All right, so the second question is the seven-point posture. Briefly describe the seven-point posture recommended for meditation practice. Why is this important? What is the essential point to remember? Okay, you should be through those 7 points, right? Any questions? Did everybody get all of them? All seven? Any doubts or anything left out? I heard all seven. They sounded good. Everybody get them? Okay. So, and if you missed it on your test, you know, correct it. Go ahead and add that in with your pencil because this is a keeper. You know, you want to take this back with you. So if you need to make some notes about things that you need to correct, go ahead and do that. And what was the most essential point to remember? The back being straight. Okay? Because even, you know, like there was somebody who was telling me that she was talking to a teacher and she was very upset because she has got a lot of different arthritis and it's hard for her to sit even in a chair right now. So the teacher was like, lay down and meditate. You know, you do what you have to do. And this is, you know, an ideal position for certain people in certain points in their life, but you can still use your mind no matter what position you're in. If you're able to sit in this position, then do so. Then it's not, you know, I'll just lay down and do it. That wouldn't be the recommendation. But, you know, if you're sick, you can still meditate. And, okay, let's move on to number three then. Number three is types of meditation. What are the two main types of meditation a person can do, and briefly describe each? So basically, what types do they usually fall in? There's a million kinds of meditation. What are the two categories they typically fall into? Okay. So, do everybody get the two types? Focus and analytical. Okay. So, anybody want to describe either of us? Who wants to describe focus? So that people at home can hear somebody besides me. I think there's a mic over there. I think there's three mics.
There are two mics.
Don't fight over the mics.
We had a really good answer.
Okay, great. Let's hear your really great answer. Nice setup.
Okay, I put focus meditation is single-pointed meditation, such as meditation on the breath or watching the mind.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Anybody else question that or want to add something to that? Or okay.
Focus meditation clears the mind for then associating the mind with positive states.
Yep. Okay. Analytical. Pass that mic around. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. No, you have an answer. Go for it.
Analytical, I put meditation on a single precept or concept, such as meditation on the nature of the mind.
Mm-hmm. Anybody want to add anything to that? Yeah.
There are two types of analytical meditation, subjective and objective.
Extra credit.
And subjective is, in my mind, experiential.
Mm-hmm.
And objective is mentally going through points about the object of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of an intellectual exercise.
Mm-hmm. Great. So if you want to jot that down. So, that's excellent. You know, so a lot of times you'll see, as you're going through DB, you know, you might meditate on, say, patience. And then in typical Tibetan Buddhist style, there's like all these points to look at the downsides of losing your patience. You might think it's obvious, but there's real clear points that will help you in your meditation to meditate on that point and then meditate on this point. And then there's real clear points on the advantages of keeping your patience. And you'll meditate on each point. And so that's a form of analytical meditation, right? And so the relationship that they have to each other can be a typical analogy used is like holding a sword. So the focus meditation is your grip. If you just had the sword but you couldn't grip it, the sword would fall out of your hand. If you didn't have a sword, then you wouldn't be able to pierce anything. But so the Buddha of wisdom, you'll see pictured as holding this sword, and that's so that you can cut through delusion. You know, it's just it's a symbol of cutting through delusion to the truth of things. And so the sword is the analysis, and the grip is your focus. And I used before, I think, you know, like a laser beam, you know. So it's those kinds of things. The analysis without that kind of focus is wavering. It's all over the map because you're busy with 3 million other things. And like, what was I thinking about again? That happens to me all the time. But when you're in this very focused meditative state, first you're using both together. And as we move in our meditation, we're going back and forth between these two kinds. You don't have to master one before you do the other. But you will see in your ability to analyze things is hugely benefited from working on your focus meditation. Okay, so number four is, what is placement meditation? Why is the image of the Buddha recommended as an object to focus upon?
Placement or single point meditation focuses on an object. You close your eyes and try to maintain that image. And the purpose is, I think, the purpose is to strengthen your ability to focus and to visualize. And by using Buddha, Tara, or a picture of the Dalai Lama, I've been suggested, but they represent the essence of Buddha.
Yeah, they're all pictures of virtue.
They inspire positive inspiration.
Yeah.
Oh, really, you don't really have to meditate as well. There's Buddha, but I mean, if you were Christian and were meditating, you could meditate on Christ.
Yeah.
You want to emulate whatever. It, you know, whatever. You're faith-based or whatever.
Placement is one type of focus, just like the 9-point breathing, counting your breaths. You know, I got walked around, I think. One of the types of focus.
Okay. Any debate or questions or thoughts? What are the what is placement meditation? I mean, technically, you can place your mind on anything. So, you know, it's similar to focus. You can place your attention on your breath. You can place your attention on an object. We've talked a lot about doing single-focused meditation by using an object because it's such like instant biofeedback of when your mind has wavered, whereas I can count to 10 and think of 20 million other things. I don't know about you, but there's a long pause between 1 and 2, and I'm all over the map. So when you're using an object as your placement, it's very easy to see how quickly you've wavered. So why is the image of the Buddha recommended as an object to focus on? Yeah.
I said, wow. I said the Buddha is both neutral and aspirational, so that's why it would make a good focus as an object during those meditations. It's both, it can be neutral and aspirational, you know, for positive states of mind, basically.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, so it represents what's good and enlightened. Okay. Anybody else? Yeah.
We were just saying that you had also mentioned that something that holds meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I had remembered you saying whatever is from your tradition.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it doesn't, you know, to be clear, it doesn't have to be the Buddha. It's recommended to people who are inspired by Buddha and people who are Buddhists. If you were inspired by another holy being, then that's what you would focus on. So this kind of meditation, this single-pointed meditation, people of any faith or faith without faith can achieve single-pointed meditation and have the same results. And you can meditate on a pencil and still get to that place of that single-pointed bliss. For Buddhists, then the image of the Buddha would be because this is an object that's a holy object, you know, then you're just planting all these incredible positive mind streams, positive seeds in your mind stream by spending so much time focusing on it. Just like I was talking to somebody who's trying to memorize this prayer. You know, it's a very long prayer. And so whether she actually is able to do all of those verses or not, the time that she spends on it and her motivation for doing it are all just hugely virtuous, right? So the image of the Buddha is, and when you said neutral, did you mean, I'm not sure how you meant exactly neutral, like, because you said also it's positive.
Yeah,
right?
like I was actually thinking, you know, how it may not be in your tradition, but I was actually thinking that it would be like a universal sign of peace, like even people who don't have that set of beliefs, you know, even understand that.
Right.
So.
Right,
that's
right.
Kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. So, for most people in the world, it wouldn't unless they were anti-Buddhists, but they would get it. They would get that this represents calm, serenity, and something peaceful. Yeah, like meditating on a peace symbol or something. Yeah, so that's a good point. And anything else? So I think you all aced that question. We talked about number five. I yabbered away about that once. I don't think we need to go into that. Number five. Number six, motivation and dedication. Discuss the importance of motivation and dedication in meditation practice. So go ahead and chat that one up. Okay. I've been listening to some very interesting answers. Yeah, you definitely don't want that stuck in your mind forever. Oh, my God. Okay, so motivation and dedication. Any discussion about motivation that was you want to share? And why it's important? Yes. Sure.
So in thinking about motivation, I always want to know, can we start small, or does it have to be really big? Do I have to think globally, or can I just think about those people that I see that day?
You can start with you. So
I get overwhelmed.
So that's why I always start our motivation with just you. Why are you here? Absolutely start small. And sometimes, as I was overhearing, sometimes even that's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not sure I really want to be here. So, I mean, what I wanted to say, too, is, you know, sometimes it's about amping up our motivation. So, like, let's just make it real practical. You made some resolutions. You're at the gym. It's, you know, you don't really want to be there that day, but you've made this promise. You're at the gym. What do you do with that? How do you kind of overcome that? Like, oh, no, I'm here. How do you start to increase your motivation when you're at the gym? Probably by reviewing, like, now, what are the benefits if I, you know, keep to this resolution? And last time when I came, I really felt better at the end of that hour. And then I know if I do all this work, I can go have a pizza, you know, or whatever it is, right? Right. Okay. So you do things to refresh your motivation. You know, the most ideal motivation isn't just sitting there on your shoulder all day long. When you have a day like that, awesome. But our days aren't always just like highest motivation just following us around. We have to do things to remind ourselves. So same thing with this. You know, it's like we come in and we review, why am I here? Or right before a meditation, I might look at a picture of a person who really inspires me, right? Their practice really inspires me, and I'll maybe even feel their presence encouraging me. And what would it be like if I could achieve that goal? But I think it's better to start small and start practical. What would it be like if I could meditate better for 5 minutes? Or how would that affect this situation or that situation? Something easier, you know, not so huge. And then if you're able to then go to the next level with it, and then what would that look like? And then how would it affect the people right around me? And then how would it affect people I don't even know? You know, so all of us probably have an experience where we're having a bad day and somebody smiled at us or somebody was kind, and it was just meant so much, right? So think like okay, and then I could be that person. So real practical. And then on a good day where it's easy to go global. But kind of review your motivation and then try to move it up. So sometimes I lay in bed in the morning and I'm really trying to get this huge motivation, and I have to start really, really small. And I read this quote that I have next to my bed, and I go, okay, let me try to carry that around. And they talk about how important it is to kind of refresh and remind yourself of that, like, hourly, you know. So that was a long answer to your question.
Yeah, thank you.
Anybody else about motivation? Okay. So then dedication. But back to motivation, but one more thing. Like, I used to keep this little notebook of little quotes or ideas or things so that when I was having a hard day of motivating myself, I could just flip to one. So things like that, whatever helps you, and they're going to be different in different circumstances, meditation versus keeping a calm mind in the car, at work, wherever it is. I mean, why do you think at our office we have so many pictures from our vacations? We usually don't have pictures in our office of, like, wars or, you know, really the headlines of the day plastered around your office. You know, that's really, we carry those around on our phone. But, you know, we have things that inspire us, like, oh, yeah, on vacation I felt so good, you know, or I'm going to work this hard for these many months because then I get to go again. It's that same thing. I mean, that's everything on the altar is all about inspiring us for to practice something. Yeah.
The other point that I think is important is to remind us our aim. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when we do that, often, you know, it cements that aim in us. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the whole point. What's the point? You can go small aim, big aim, medium aim, big aim, whatever is going to get you there. But it's like, kind of like a dial. You can start with, you know, one step and then just keep increasing that, you know. Okay, dedication. Is that a hard, I mean, is it, we probably all intellectually get it. Yeah, right behind you.
I said dedication is the offering up of the fruits of our motivation, of our meditation to all sentient beings.
Okay.
So really it's that sort of that gift.
Mm-hmm. It is, it's a decision of where you're going to put all that merit you just created by whatever you did, whatever you just did. You know how, you know, you open a novel and the right first front page, this book is dedicated to my beloved son, daughter, husband, wife, friend, dog, whatever. There's a whole dedication page there. And it's that author who spent all that time writing that story and all their effort. Now they're dedicating all that effort to this person. You know, it's a really wonderful, some of the dedications are wonderful, right? It's the same kind of thing. But sometimes it's harder for me to feel it. I can feel the motivation, but I can't feel the dedication as much. I have to really sit and really, really think about that. And then I can logically, I can use my logic to like, okay, so there's a cause and effect, and none of my efforts, none of my actions just don't, they all have a result. So now by dedicating them, I am like putting it in a safety deposit box. I am putting it somewhere where I want it to grow. You know, I think, Joanne, I heard you describing. You want to use that same description? Yeah, in your group, you were saying something about dedication.
Oh, I was talking about not allowing it to dissipate.
Right.
But to plant it somewhere for the benefit of others.
For the benefit of others. And a really important thing to remember is that others include you. So I remember Geshe-la telling me that sometimes, you know, we forget that others means yourself as well. So he has this funny story about, I think it was, I'm not sure where, it was somewhere in India, and, you know, somebody had gone into the restroom to use the restroom, and there was very little toilet paper left, and so they were being very considerate, and they left a little bit for the next person on the roll. And so then they went out and they did something, and then they had a really bad stomach ache. They ran into the bathroom, and luckily there was a little bit of toilet paper there because they had left it. So that may be you that you're doing this good thing for. Yeah.
Yes, there's also the traditional analogy of like your little bit of merit. I mean, I don't think I'm generating that much merit when I'm, you know, meditating, but so you're taking a little drop of merit and you're adding it to the ocean.
Exactly.
Because they say that the little drop by itself will dry up, but if you
right.
add it to, I guess, the larger intentions of all the enlightened beings and
right.
the Buddhas, that somehow it is more powerful.
Sure.
That way, right?
Absolutely. So you can think of, I've heard that talk about like take a grain of rice and put it into a whole pot of rice. Now your grain of rice is combined with that. So you can meditate on all the virtuous actions that other people that you know have done, or that people that you turn on the news and you see some of these heroic acts, and then you think about all the really, you know, holy beings and the saints and all these people, and then you can certainly add your merit to that. So I know also you'll hear Geshe-la talk about how so somebody like Donald Trump, obviously in a previous life, was incredibly generous person, but might not have dedicated it in the way that you might be dedicating it now. So your generosity and your good acts, if you're dedicating it to removing the obstacles between you and your enlightenment so that you could be of benefit to yourself and all others, that's a solid dedication. You could be very generous and not dedicate it. It will still ripen in some way, but it might not ripen in the way that we're discussing. And so one time I took Geshe-la to the flea market. He talks about this all the time because he saw this couple of people pushing these puppies in carriages, you know, with little clothes on, and they weren't like old dogs that needed to be pushed. They were just dogs in carriages, and he was looking at them. And later he said, "What happened?" And I didn't know what he meant, you know. And he goes, "No, what he meant was what happened to their karma." He goes, "Something happened because they should have been human beings. You know, they're being treated like human beings. They're having all the advantages of human beings, but they're not human beings." So he said, "Something happened there. Must not have dedicated their marriage." Your cat also is like that. But, you know, when you go to India and you see all these scraggly little dogs about, you know, like this size, you know, and so then to see this dog that has better than many people on this planet, their life. And so, okay, so that's dedication. And they're considered the two bookends. So you can do that certainly in a practice, but certainly also in your day. And then, the other thing I wanted to say is that in motivation, sometimes we are, it's a way to, I finally got this, that, you know, if I really look at my life, all day long I'm just consuming, It's not even the kind of consumerism that we talk about that's so obvious, but just I go to a beautiful museum and I'm just looking, everything's for me, for me, for me. And that when you do this kind of practice, you are including that then. Like, it's like before you eat, you're thinking about all the other beings and you're wishing that you could just offer this food to them as well. That kind of tends to take the edge off of our consumerism. Just that wish, that thought. When I look at beautiful roses, then I'm like, I'm offering them to the world right away. It can also be practical because what Geshe-la would say is that's increasing your ability to be more generous then, just by always having that in your mind. Okay, number 7, obstacles and antidotes. Give a brief description of the antidote to restlessness and distraction arising during meditation and sleepiness in meditation. Okay, let's share. Okay, so restlessness and distractions. And then you can write down some that you might not have gotten so that you'll remember it because you're going to take this home. So some antidotes for restlessness and distractions arising during meditation. Shout them out. Counting, okay. Yeah. So say you're doing an analytical meditation, you feel really restless, you go back to that counting. What else could you do?
You can close your eyes. They're open.
Right. If you're, yeah. Close your eyes.
Go to the 9-step.
The 9-round breathing meditation. Very good. That definitely. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Anything else?
I added at the end of my list to end the session if you're struggling.
Yeah. Go run around the block. Do something physical. You know, the typical thing in Buddhism would be to do some prostrations. It's very physical. You might need, might create the merit for you to have a better a meditation session. You can also lower your focus a little bit. So you can bring yourself more into your body by kind of focusing more on your abdomen. Thinking of your, if you're doing the placement meditation on an object, you might see that object as heavy. You might have picked an object that's very heavy to begin with because you struggle with restlessness. Okay, what about sleepiness in meditation? Yeah. open your eyes a little bit, let some light in, turn up the light. What'd you say? Yeah, you can raise your eyes. Especially if you have like an image that you're focusing on, you can mentally raise that image as well. That you're, you know, mentally looking up.
Make sure your chin isn't down on your chest.
Yeah, make sure you're not like this. Lift your head up. Get off the pillow. Yeah.
Walking meditation, maybe get up and move a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could move around, do a walking meditation. I've also said, you know, get up, splash some water on your face. Yeah. Yeah. Experiment with the time of day. You know, coming home right from work and meditating might be a big mistake. We want to have success. So you find the time that you're having more success and work with that. And then, you know, just as a side note, we talked about ending the meditation when it's successful so that you're happy to come back to it. You're eager to come back because that last one was successful, or whatever that means. What else? Anything else?
Louise, you had one. Seeing the image as bright.
That's right. If you have an image that you're using it for single-pointed meditation, then like just blast a whole bunch of light at that. But the you know, the main thing I want you all to leave with is not to be so discouraged, you know, that it's going to go up and down. So you, that's the way it was, you know. Today was a difficult day. You were sleepy. So, okay, don't prolong it so that you leave there really discouraged. Just end it so that the next day you start at a different time or, you know, the circumstances are different and you, you're not as sleepy. There were other things that were on the, I just had you answer those two, but on the test template, they also had the obstacles of being, what were they? Attachment to successful meditation. You know, what was an antidote to that? It's the antidote is basically knowing that things are impermanent. So, you know, sometimes you have these really brilliant meditations, everything was easy, and then the next time you come back there, you think you're just going to have that one again, and you don't. And so not getting too attached to the outcome, just knowing that this is a process. And actually, I think one of the things to all of these is to noting it. So like if you really struggle with monkey mind, try to observe it. If your mind is all over the place and it's chattering away, you try to give it a little bit distance and watch it. Same thing with sleepiness. Okay, I'm going to try to step back and just watch how sleepy my mind is. Giving it a little more space. If you struggle with some physical discomfort during meditation, trying not to make it go away, but to try to almost open up around it and just watch it. You know, just watch it. Like we're watching our thoughts rising. To me, at one point when I was doing this, I really started to see and feel that the thoughts were like waves on an ocean. And I could, as soon as I noticed it, it would just go back down. And then there was a little bit of a lull and then the next one would come up. And so then that point is to notice when that lull is and try to rest there a little bit. And so you'll notice with your breathing too, at the end of a breath, there's a little bit of lull before you inhale. When you get really good at single-pointed meditation, what you'll typically notice is that when you inhale, the image wavers a little bit. And I asked this one teacher about it. I said, as long as I'm exhaling, the image is clear. And then as soon as I inhale, he goes, yeah, because inhaling takes effort. Exhaling doesn't really take much effort. But when you're inhaling, it's shaking that effort. And so part of, he said there's this technique of you exhale really slowly and then just kind of hold your breath for a while. I was like, okay, that was harder for me. but so you'll notice these different things. So the last one, I don't know, we have running out of time, but any obstacles that you all want to talk about and ask about, obstacles, benefits, pep talks for each other. Oh, good. Great.
The benefits have been great. I find myself calmer, less knee-jerk reactions to negative things that happen. My wife and I spent 3 weeks in Germany with our oldest son and his wife and their three kids who are 5, 3, and 1.
Ooh.
3 weeks.
Ooh, yeah.
I did a lot of meditating or hiding, whichever you want to call it.
Well, great. Great. Anybody else? Are people finding it difficult to find time to meditate? Yeah, that's the trickiest one usually. Any antidotes to that anybody's found they want to share? Getting up 5 minutes earlier or, yeah. It's right next to you.
So I think it was something you said a few weeks ago. You said, you know, if you can't find the time to meditate, you really need to reevaluate, like, your priorities. I don't think that's quite how you put it.
Yeah, that sounds so harsh.
It is kind of harsh, and that's not how you meant it. But, I mean, that's kind of how I took it.
Yeah.
And so I look at my priorities. Okay, what can I get rid of the first 5 minutes of my day or the last 5 minutes? Because it's really all I can handle at this point, if I'm being kind to myself. 5 minutes is all I've got.
Right.
And one day I'll get to 10 or 20, but for now it's 5.
Yeah.
So that's been helpful to me, just to put it into a greater context. I've got 24 hours. Where can I find 5 minutes?
Yeah. Okay,
so.
Good. Good. I've heard somebody else say that, too, that when they really look at everything they're doing in their day, like sometimes I really don't want to practice that ukulele, and I'm looking at these ridiculous things on YouTube. I'm like, oh, my God. It's like it just sucks you in. It's like I really don't need to see another little animal on YouTube, you know. But they're just so cute. So then just telling myself, you know, I can come back to that. Let me go do this other thing for a few minutes. It's finding those 5 minutes can be really tricky. I had another friend who, she found this place at work that she could spend 5 minutes on her lunch break. And so she would go in there, and it was like this little closet they made for people to have phone calls. And then so she would go in there for 5 minutes and found that time. And she got paid for it. Well, it was her lunch break. She could either be eating or she could be sitting there meditating, and she would meditate for 5 minutes before she ate.
So I have a challenge. I've been traveling a lot and different locations and that sort of thing. It's easy for me to keep my practice if I'm at home, and it's just the same, you know, get up, you do it, that sort of thing. But when you're traveling or you're in the go or you're around a lot of different people or that sort of thing, how do you find that time, because all of a sudden it seems like everybody wants some of your time instead of you just having the time to do what you want to do.
Yeah, I'm such a hermit that it's nobody wants to spend any time with me. I don't know. When I go out on those trips with people, it's one thing I have found that helps me is I bring the picture that I have of the Dalai Lama that I've used as a single-pointed meditation. So I bring that with me wherever I go. So I'm in these different hotel rooms, and that's always there, right? Kind of like its own little mini altar. And that helps me kind of remember and bring that awareness there. And so even if I'm just getting up a few minutes earlier, you know, I'm able to carve out that little bit of time, because then it's just chaos. Everything's out there, and it's fast and furious, and but I'm able to do that. I don't know if that helps. Yeah.
You know, I do a similar thing. I have a little, I call it my traveling altar that I take with me. It's actually a picture of Rinpoche's altar.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's a great altar.
Yeah.
But one time I was at a meeting of a bunch of academics, and there was a get-together in the afternoon after a break. And we were out in sort of a nice garden area. And I looked over at a bench, and there was one of the participants was sitting there meditating. Mm-hmm. And people around were milling around him and talking and everything, but he was just totally focused. And I thought, you can do it anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, he was pretty remarkable. I don't think I could do that.
Well,
he wasn't. He wasn't.
But you can do it in a way that nobody knows. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
I had a thing that helps me. It's to tie my meditation to something else I regularly do. So I 5 times a day pray, participate in yoga every day, twice a day. So then I just tie it into that, either before or after. I'm still spending the same amount of time. It's just sneaking it in a little before or after, and then that helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I kind of even make a little note on my hand. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to, like, say the 4 immeasurables, you know, may all in a crowd, in my head, in a crowd. So I'm at a conference, and there's lots of time at a conference that I'm not fully in. I mean, I'm walking around getting something to drink, you know. If I can just look out over everybody and say that in my head, you know, that's that 2 seconds of connecting to something other than all this, you know. And it just, it's kind of that same feeling of when you have a dream and you realize you're dreaming. You know, it's you're having a conference and realizing you're dreaming. and just gives that little bit of a break, or okay, I'm gonna walk through this room very mindfully, you know, at minimum, or whatever helps you as a prompt. And again, if it's getting up 5 minutes earlier at a hotel, because something about at a hotel, there's so much less to do than there is at home. I usually do have a little bit extra time if I could just get up, you know. Any other tips or questions or prompts? So we're going to dedicate now, okay? So you all have done an amazing job of coming to these classes and taking a test. Okay, and if you didn't pass your test, let me know. But I have a feeling everybody passed. So do I sign those cards? When do I sign them? At the practice day. The practice day is the 24th. If you can't make the practice day, it's going to be taped. So you could watch it and do the different exercise. Because I'm going to be, here's what we're going to do on the practice day. It's not going to be all brutal. It's going to be fun. We're going to have more opportunities to do some of the single-pointed meditation. So if you have a photograph or an object that you're using, please bring it in. If you want to try it, then pick one that you think you would stick with and bring it in, because we're going to have an opportunity to do that focus meditation on an object. If you'd rather just use your breath, that's fine too. So I think during the first hour, we're going to have these short sessions of focus meditation where it'll be something like 8 to 10 minutes of focus meditation, then we get up, move around, then we come back and do it again for that hour. And we'll do some walking meditation, take a little break, then I'll do some guided meditation, which will be like going to the movies compared to working on your own. You know, you just have to sit there and listen to me, and I'll be flashing all kinds of stuff on the screen. So for those of you who can't come and you want to participate in that, then you can go online. If you're not sure how to do that, talk to Joanna after the class. You can watch that, so you'll have that whole bit of time. If you're not able to do that, talk to me about how I can help you set that up so you can do that at home. Okay? So anyway, congratulate yourself. Close your eyes for a minute. And just, you know, it's not easy to motivate yourself. And you have gotten yourself, your body here, and your mind here, all these different sessions. It's remarkable how many other people are doing that on Monday nights in Raleigh. You know, it's it is really something to rejoice in. And it will have a result. You've already seen some of the results, but there's so many more results that you can't even fathom. So in addition to coming here and working on your motivation and trying and reading these things, you're also sharing what you're working on with other people. That's also hugely beneficial. Again, hard to even see the results of all of that, the ripple effect. So now think for a minute about how you would like for this to arise, how you would like for all these seeds to ripen, you know, for yourself, for the people around you, the people you don't know. On a very simple level, you can think about how, what kind of person you hope to be tomorrow, next month, next year. Dedicate it towards that. How you would like to be in the grandest of senses, you know, the somebody who really inspires you, how you would like to be like them, what your mind is capable of. If you've been able to work with your mind, even in the ways you've been describing it, calmer, then that shows you that anything is possible. Because if you can do it then, you can continue to do it. So in this way, we dedicate our merit that we may be able to achieve all of these goals for the benefit of ourselves and for all others. Thank you.
Thank you. And I hope to...